Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Rediscovering Openness, Part 2, Transforming Our Kleshas, by Lama Adam Berner. Lama Adam describes how our afflictive emotions can be transformed into the five wisdoms, based on a commentary by Kempo Carter Rinpoche titled The Five Buddha Families. Sources include The Five Buddha Families by Kempo Carter Rinpoche and Everyday Consciousness and Primordial Wisdom by Kenshin Trangu Rinpoche. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Adam Berner. I'm the associate resident teacher at Columbus KTC. And today I'm going to be speaking on the topic of the five wisdoms. And this is kind of part two of a talk that I delivered 2 months ago. The last time I gave an 11:30 talk. And that talk was about the five skandhas. And so today will be about the five wisdoms or transforming our kleshas. So a lot to talk about today, so I'm not going to dilly-dally too much. I'll just say it was really nice yesterday to see a lot of people at the KTC building site. We did construction site tours yesterday, so it was really cool to see people in person and get to walk around the building. And the drywall isn't up, but the walls all are, so you can kind of see the layout, get a feel for how it's going to be to walk in there and walk around. And multiple bathrooms. I can't think of how many, but quite a step up from two in the last building. So it was really great. So thank you to Lama Kathy and Kim Miracle, our director, who put that all together, and to Alan, our project manager, our representative with the construction companies. He came out and helped, and it was really neat. So it's coming together. So let's start. I'm going to try to share my screen here, and I'm going to start with the refuge prayer. And this is the prayer where we take refuge in valid sources of refuge, which are said to be the three jewels. So we're taking refuge in the Buddha, who found what is true, you know, realized his potential and realized the true nature. We're taking refuge in the Dharma, which is the teachings that lead to our full potential in realizing our true nature. And the Sangha, which is the community who practices with us and can support us in our practice. So if you know this prayer, you can chant along. If not, just make the aspiration that our time here today is a benefit to yourself and to others and to the world in general. It's really great that we can be here and do this. It's not the case that everyone even thinks of doing something like this. So our propensity to be involved in this type of reflection and self-improvement and wishing to help others is a unique blessing that we have. So let's use it. So we'll say this once in Tibetan, once in English, and then once again in Tibetan. O Sangye Chidang Suki Chot Nam La Chanchu Padu Dagni Kyab Suji Dagi Jin Suki Pe Su Nam Ki Drola Penchi Sangye Drupa Sho. Now in English, until I reach enlightenment, I take refuge in all the Buddhas and in the Dharma and in the Noble Sangha. By the merit of accomplishing the six perfections, may I achieve Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Once more in Tibetan. Sangye chidang suki chognam la Janchu padu dakni kyapsu chi. Dagi jin so gi pe sunam ki. Rola penchi sange drupasho. I'll say a short prayer of my own. Bauden sawe lama rimboje dagi chi wo pe de denjula. Kajin chenpo go ne jesun te. Kusun toki nyudrup sadhu so. So the sources for my talk today are a fantastic, of course it's fantastic, it's Kempo Carter Rinpoche's teaching, but it's one of Kempo Carter Rinpoche's commentaries available from KTD. It's called The Five Buddha Families. This was my primary source for the talk on aggregates. The framework of this is still kind of what I'm using, but for most of the details, I went with Trungpa Rinpoche's Everyday Consciousness and Primordial Awareness. And this primordial awareness, I'm not going to be using that term much today, just to stick with one type of nomenclature. But this awareness in Trungpa Rinpoche's book is synonymous with wisdom. So when we talk about the five wisdoms, Trungpa Rinpoche talks about the five primordial awarenesses, same thing. So and I'll be sticking with wisdoms today. So like I said, my last talk was about the five skandhas. And as I mentioned then, when we get into anything related to the five Buddha families, there are a lot of connections that can be talked about. Lots of fives, related to the five Buddha families or the five Buddha potentials, as Kempo Carter Rinpoche put it. He described them as like five styles of enlightenment. So with the last talk and this one today, I've decided to focus in specifically on one set of fives, examining them from both how they appear from our unenlightened perspective and how they appear from the perspective of enlightened mind. Which is our mind unclouded by ignorance and delusion. It's the mind of a Buddha. As we discussed last time, a fundamental problem for us is that we do not see things as they are. We do not see things accurately. In particular, I'm talking about seeing the true nature, our true nature and the nature of things as they are. As long as we're unable to see the nature of reality as it is, we're ignorant of it. In fact, Kempo Carter Rinpoche said that in Dharma, the term ignorant applies to all sentient beings insofar as they take at face value the five aggregates, as we talked about last time, and the five mental afflictions. Ignorance means the failure to recognize the actual nature of the aggregates and the mental afflictions or negative emotions. So it's not that we're lacking something that we need to like go out and acquire. It's that we already have something that we're currently unable to see properly. We cannot see it as it is. We have a mistaken view because our ignorance and the habitual tendencies by which we maintain this mistaken view. We have this view because of our ignorance, and it's extended and carried out through these habitual tendencies that reinforce that mistaken view. So I find it helpful to organize my talks by like topics that apply, that sort of run through the talk. I find that it'd be a helpful way to organize my talks. So these are the three topics that I kind of want to run through today. These are the three themes that I hope are covered in pretty good detail today. Non-rejection, awareness and ignorance, and ultimate and relative truth. So just in by way of introduction, today is going to be a lot of information. It may be too much information. I may be completely out of my league teaching it. It's quite likely. But if I have one goal today, it's to motivate you to do your practice, to do your meditation practice. And that's why we're going to talk about all of this. as a motivator for us to sit on our cushions and engage in the practices our teachers have given us as they have taught us to do them. Whether it's shamatha, lojong, deity practices of the secret mantra, nundro, mahamudra, whatever it is. Because what today is really all about is who we really are and what we already have. This talk itself is not going to make you enlightened. It's not going to instantly reveal your innate wisdom or limitless compassion. Make no mistake, it is our practice that does that. Our meditation. It's not our study. Nobody's ever studied their way to enlightenment. So in a way, it doesn't even really matter if you understand what I'm going to talk about today. I hope you do. I hope that some things resonate for you. And I hope I'm clear and explain things in a way that makes sense and is accurate. But really, as long as you are doing your practice, as your teachers have instructed, you'll discover all of this on your own. Ultimately, because you already know this stuff. This is part of you. That said, a little advice on listening to this and really any Dharma talk. I can't remember where this teaching came from. I definitely heard it from Lama Kathy initially. But when you listen to talks, it's good to kind of have two drawers sitting beside you, metaphorically. So if you hear something that you don't understand, first of all, there's chat window, and I won't answer questions necessarily as they come in, but I will stop and try to answer questions definitely at the end and probably in the middle too. So feel free to ask questions if you don't understand something. But if you don't understand it, and we're talking about very heady topics, so it's quite possible, you know, that you won't understand something. And so rather than just discarding that, you know, put it in this things you don't understand drawer. Like, just put it in that drawer. Likewise with things that you maybe just don't believe. You know, you hear something, you go, I can't believe that. You know, I don't believe that. Again, we'll put it in the things you don't believe drawer. So we have the things you don't understand drawer and the things you don't believe drawer. And the idea here is to throw nothing away, because it is the case that as your practice develops, things will make sense to you that didn't earlier. And you'll find utility for things and practices that you maybe didn't believe were useful before or didn't believe at all. So just throw nothing away is what we're talking about. And that relates to one of the themes that I mentioned earlier, which is non-rejection, rejecting nothing. And this means really using what we have, using our own experiences, good and bad, as the fuel for our wisdom fire. In particular, today we're talking about non-rejection in terms of transforming our kleshas, our afflictive negative emotions that can so often carry us away. We'll explore how the five wisdoms are the transformation of our afflictive emotions. The five wisdoms are the result of completely purifying all of our delusion about the nature of ourselves and all phenomena. And first, we're going to explore this in terms of the three vehicles, or how each cycle of the Buddha's teaching contains tools which help us to clear away our delusion and reveal our Buddha nature. So in the first cycle of the Buddha's teaching, the Hinayana, or the foundational vehicle, our motivation is to end our own suffering. And the first teaching the Buddha gave was the Four Noble Truths. And in a quick overview, he said that our life, a characteristic of our existence is suffering, that suffering is a part of life, and that that suffering has a cause, and that cause is attachment or clinging, particularly to the idea of a self or our self-concept. And then the third noble truth is the truth of the cessation of suffering, which is to say, if suffering has a cause and we remove the cause, we can achieve the cessation of suffering. And the fourth noble truth is the truth of the path, which leads to the cessation of suffering. And so to talk about each of these in a little bit more detail, the truth of suffering, the Sanskrit word for suffering is dukkha. And it has a meaning that's much closer to dissatisfaction or discomfort, dissatisfactoriness. You know, it's that sense that that things are just not right, things that makes us kind of want to do something, it could be really acute sort of suffering. It could be like these things like loss or death or fear, it could be these very dramatic things that we generally think of in English when we say suffering. But those are all like the macro form of what we're talking about with dukkha, which more often and basically constantly appears in this very subtle form of just dissatisfaction. And then that's caused by our attachment, our grasping and clinging primarily to this illusory self. And these two, this attachment that causes this dukkha, this is what's constantly making us feel like we need to react. It's what makes us react with anger when we don't like something or we feel threatened. It's what makes us desirous when we see something that we really want. It's what makes us ignore the things that we don't think have anything to do with us. In all of these cases, it's our attachment that has created this sense of suffering. And then we perpetuate it with our reactions. And our reactions are frequently in the form of the five afflictive emotions, which we'll get into here in a minute. So the cause of suffering is grasping, attachment. So if the cause of suffering is eliminated, its result will not arise. It's possible to attain the cessation of suffering, is what we're saying. And then the fourth noble truth is the truth of the path, which is there is a path which leads to the cessation of suffering. That can be summarized as the Eightfold Noble Path, or put more simply, do no harm, practice only virtue, tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. And that's a really great little thing to try and keep in your mind and memorize. If you're ever wondering what to do in a situation, that's a good guideline, because that is the summation of all of Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha. And that last line, this is the teaching of the Buddha, is what signifies that. Like this summarizes it all. So in these four noble truths, we see that, for instance, with the first two, if we react to stimulus based on attachment, the result is inevitably suffering. However, with the second two of these four, the truth of the cessation and the truth of the path, we see, for instance, that if we react to stimuli by applying the path, by applying Dharma, the antidotes, then the result is the cessation of suffering. So these are kind of two ways of dealing with it, two approaches. One of them creates suffering, one of them brings about the cessation of suffering. So what we normally do from our self-cherishing perspective, our perspective of ignorance of our true nature, is we react with one of the five afflictive emotions. These are also called kleshas, if you've heard that word before. And we see them here. Ignorance is in the center of this this diagram, which is basically a mandala. So we'll talk a little bit more about this later. But then you see around the outside these other ones: anger, pride, desire, and jealousy. And ignorance is in the middle for a reason, and that is because it pervades the other four. They are all exist because of ignorance. So ignorance is in the middle. It's like in the center, just like if we want to figure out east, west, north, and south, we need to know where the center is, or else they're kind of meaningless. That's why there's no north, south in space, So in the center here, we have ignorance. And then around the outside, we have these other manifestations, these other afflictive emotions. So as long as we're acting out of ignorance, we'll react with one of these five styles. And all of these are based on ignorance, pervaded by it, like I said. But when ignorance is cleared away, these five afflictive emotions reveal themselves as the five wisdoms or five styles of enlightenment. Rinpoche also describes them as species of wisdom. And those wisdoms are what we mistake as the kleshas, as long as we're ignorant of our true nature or ultimate truth. So in the case of the primary Hinayana practices of shamatha, we're not rejecting our thoughts. Remember, non-rejection is one of the things we're talking about today. We're simply cultivating awareness of how and when they arise, as well as the power to choose which thoughts we wish to engage. In fact, it is because we have thoughts that we can do this practice at all. So again, we don't reject our thoughts. It's because of them that we can engage in this practice. And if you've had instruction in shamatha, you know that you're not supposed to try to chase the thoughts out of your head. You know, you're not supposed to try to chase them out of your mind. Instead, we're told to simply label them as thinking, to notice them, be aware of them, label them as thinking, and return our attention to the breath. We make a choice to return our attention to the breath. And those moments when we notice distraction are these golden opportunities. They happen actually all day long, but we rarely notice them. We rarely realize when a distraction hooks us and carries us away. We rarely realize that we have any choice at all in the matter of what thoughts we follow. We don't realize that we don't have to follow every thought that comes into our head, that thoughts are impermanent and insubstantial, and that we can see them arise and make a choice not to react to them. We have that power, but we need to familiarize ourselves with it. And through this new way of interacting with our thoughts in the practice of shamatha, we move towards a more realistic view of who we really are. Rather than just blindly indulging our ignorance, we are increasing our awareness. And in doing so, we identify less and less with our thoughts. We notice that they're fickle and they're fleeting. And instead of thinking that those make us who we are and that we're kind of controlled by them, we begin to relate more with the awareness that notices those thoughts. And that awareness is where the thoughts arise from and where they recede back to. So that's the Hinayana approach. Then the Mahayana, the second cycle of the Buddha's teaching, the motivation becomes ending the suffering of all beings. And we see that all beings want to be happy. It's not just us. Like, we all share this wish to be happy. We also share the same nature. And what is that nature? This the true nature of reality exactly as it is. What is that? We're asking, like, what is ultimate truth? And it's taught that ultimate truth is emptiness. Emptiness characterized by two aspects. There's two ways we can, from a conceptual standpoint, try to describe it. And those aspects are emptiness, which is closer to the idea of without limits, you know, non-conceptual. There's no reference points. Emptiness doesn't mean there's nothing there, because that would imply that there's something, you know, and this is non-dual, you know, limitless. In a way, we can think of it like open space, as long as we're aware that when we say open space, we're implying that there is unopen space, and emptiness is the nature of all things. So again, these are imperfect ways of talking about something that is beyond concepts. You know, we only speak in concepts, so it's kind of impossible to accurately, it is impossible to accurately describe emptiness. This is all an example of the finger pointing at the moon. You know, like, these are fingers pointing at the moon. They are not themselves the moon. So this first aspect is this emptiness aspect. But then the second aspect is the lucidity aspect, which is clarity and awareness. So emptiness has these two aspects to it, these two qualities. So one way I've heard it described is like open space that knows. Like, it's open space that is aware. And it has these two qualities. Now, the clarity aspect, the lucidity aspect, is one that we're actually really familiar with. In fact, we're enraptured by it all the time. It seems, you know, in doing so, we basically have forgotten the emptiness aspect altogether. We're just so focused on the lucidity aspect, like seeing all the stuff, you know? So the Mahayana method is to transform our experience. helping us to find our true nature, primarily through the practice of Lojong. So both in the relative practice of Tonglen, the compassion meditation, which is taking on others' suffering and giving them all our happiness, and the ultimate practice of absolute bodhicitta, which is actually an analytical meditation in which we try to generate an experience of the emptiness of our own minds. And that these two approaches are really important because, as I said, we can't talk about emptiness and we can't even understand it. We can only experience it. And that's why we use phrases like seeing the true nature, you know, because we can't, there's no way to talk about it. And in fact, if you feel like you don't understand emptiness, you're in the right place. Because if you feel like you do understand it, there's something wrong. You know, understanding emptiness is the fruition. You know, like seeing emptiness, having a sustained experience of it is Buddhahood. So we're going to have this feeling that we don't quite get it for a long time until we get there, you know. So through these practices of Lojong, we're increasing our awareness of our true nature and the awareness of things as they are, and in the process, dispelling our ignorance. And again, we're not rejecting the relative aspect here. We're using it to help us reveal the ultimate aspect. So we need it, in fact, in order to help us clear away any obscurations and accumulate the merit necessary to realize our own true nature. Then moving on to the Vajrayana, it brings with it elements of both the Hinayana and the Mahayana. It is the skillful means by which we begin to realize the two truths, emptiness and lucidity, ultimate truth and relative truth. We begin to realize these two truths as inseparable from each other. They are coexistent. And this is primarily done through the practices of Tantra or secret mantra, wherein we visualize ourselves as enlightened deities. Here's a few examples, Green Tara and Chenrezig. These are a few deities that we practice at Columbus KTC. As we do this, we're always instructed to visualize them as if they were made of light. In other words, we see ourselves vividly as the deity, yet we know that we're completely insubstantial, not at all solid, yet vibrant and full of detail. So while on the surface, this may look like a kind of fantasy, an imagination game in a way, the Vajrayana and its tantric practices are actually an invitation to experience our true nature. In seeing ourselves as vivid yet insubstantial with unlimited enlightened qualities such as love, compassion, patience, and completely perfected wisdom, that's actually much closer to the reality of our situation than our normal view of ourselves as static, limited beings somehow separated from enlightened mind. So this kind of practice begins to purify our delusions about the true nature, about Buddha nature. And when we say purify, we should note that ultimately there's nothing pure or impure. But relatively speaking, we must purify our obscurations, our ignorance, in order to reveal our true nature. In order to reveal what's already there, what's innate within us, it's obscured. And so we need to purify those obscurations. And when we're able to see things as they are without delusion or confusion, that's what we mean by pure. So now on to the five wisdoms. We can break them into two groups of two different groups. We can break them into the five wisdoms as two or the five wisdoms as five. Thinking of them in terms of two, there is the wisdom that knows the nature of reality exactly as it is. And then there's the wisdom that knows the full extent of reality. I've also heard that second one stated as like knowing the multiplicity of phenomena. So the first one kind of reflects this emptiness aspect, knowing the nature of reality exactly as it is, emptiness. And then the second one knows all the details, you know, all the multiplicity of phenomena. And so that's sort of like the lucidity aspect. So again, the that emptiness aspect pervades the other. So the first one here, the wisdom that knows the nature of reality exactly as it is only one of the five wisdoms. And then the other four belong to the second group, the wisdom that knows the full extent of reality. So moving on to the five wisdoms as five, the first one is Dharmadhatu wisdom. And that actually comprises the first of those two categories we just saw. Dharmadhatu wisdom is the wisdom that knows the nature exactly as it is. And the other four around the outside belong to the category of wisdom that knows the nature to its full extent, or the wisdom that recognizes the multiplicity of all phenomena. And Dharmadhatu is in the center here, again, because it pervades the other four. So deluded mind, a mind that remains ignorant of its true nature, experiences the afflictions. Whereas enlightened mind, a mind free from delusion, one that knows the true nature, experiences those same energies that a deluded mind experiences as the kleshas, as the afflictive emotions. The enlightened mind experiences those energies as the five wisdoms. So we will start with the four wisdoms that belong to the latter category of the wisdoms that know the true extent of the full extent of reality, or multiplicity of phenomena. But before we jump in, as you'll see, we were talking about these mental afflictions. This is sort of a comparison. So as you can see on the left, this is what how we experience these things and as unenlightened beings. And then you see on the right, when our experience is purified, when delusion is purified, we experience the five wisdoms. And we're working with, like I said, part of this is kind of introducing, I'm slowly kind of introducing you to this idea of the mandala, which you see has a center, you know, and then the four cardinal directions, like we mentioned a little bit earlier. So looking at these particular wisdoms, the first we're going to talk about is the mirror-like wisdom. And as I said, this is the one of the sources here is the Five Buddha Families Commentary by Kempo Carter Rinpoche. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the five Buddhas in particular, but the five Buddhas are the embodiments of these wisdoms. They're the form of these wisdoms. And that's really all we need to know today. So mirror-like wisdom is embodied by the Buddha Akshobhya. And a mirror here symbolizes the appearance of all things. A mirror doesn't conceptualize or comment. It just reflects whatever's in front of it. And mirror-like wisdom knows the complete mode of all beings, the complete mode of being of all sentient beings. And it sees the diversities of experience experienced by sentient beings. And it is, in fact, the purified mental affliction of anger or mental fixation, which is a great way to think about anger. Contemplate that one later on. Then we have the wisdom of equality, and it is embodied by the Buddha Ratnasambhava. And because all appearances are like reflections in a mirror, they are seen as such. And this means both appearances of outer phenomena, all the things that we see, we think of as equally. But it's more important to know that that we're also talking about seeing appearances of self and other as equal too. So we think more often about the equality of stuff, you know, in the world. But the salient difference here between deluded mind and enlightened mind is that there's no longer any differentiation between self and other. Equal. And this is the transformation of the mental affliction of pride. And some of these are not as obvious, but I feel like that one's pretty obvious, you know, how that wisdom relates to the klesha that it is the transformation of. Then we have discriminating wisdom, which is embodied by the Buddha Amitabha. And so with this wisdom, even though all things are seen as equal, discriminating wisdom perceives individual differences without mixing them up. So it knows everything distinctly and without mistake. And it is the transformation of desire, the klesha, or the mental affliction of desire. And you can, this is another one I think that, that is kind of more clear as to how that desire relates to this discriminating wisdom as the enlightened aspect. Then we have all accomplishing wisdom, which is embodied by the Buddha Amoghasiddhi. So because enlightened mind realizes the nature of all things, it realizes their equality and their diversity, it's able to perfectly accomplish all actions. And this is the wisdom that perfects the enlightened activity of a Buddha. It's the purified mental affliction of jealousy. And last, we have the Dharmadhatu wisdom. And Dharmadhatu, if you recall, was in the middle. You know, it's kind of like open space, pervades the others. So seeing emptiness, Dharmadhatu, first of all, Kenpo Karda Rinpoche said, seeing emptiness is seeing Dharmadhatu. So Dharmadhatu can be equated with emptiness. So seeing emptiness is seeing the Dharmadhatu. And, you know, when, remember when we talked about the two wisdoms, again, this is the wisdom that knows the nature of reality exactly as it is, and it pervades the others. It arises from seeing the true nature of the aggregate of form. So any forms we actually, this wisdom sees as empty. It corresponds to the awareness that knows the nature of reality exactly as it is, and it is the perfect realization of emptiness. And this is the result of purifying or transforming our ignorance and misconceptions about the true nature. So you can see here, this is kind of bringing it all together. You see the mandala of five Buddhas on the left. And then on the right here, I have the kleshas, the five afflictive emotions, and then the wisdoms that they are transformed to. So when we talk about the five Buddhas and the five wisdoms, we're not talking about anything separate from ourselves. Again, this is not something separate. They're not like off somewhere else. We need to find them and meet them. On the contrary, we're talking about what we are and what we will experience when we see things as they really are. So some people find the idea of our true nature being empty to be frightening, you know, something like dark or depressing. The idea of overcoming our self-concept, you know, overcoming this attachment to the self can maybe feel like we're talking about some kind of death, you know, like an extinguishing of experience. But that's an incorrect view. What actually happens when we clear away our obscurations and see the true nature, when we realize the nature of things and the full extent of things, is that we manifest the five wisdoms embodied by the five Buddhas. So, of course, we haven't realized emptiness yet. That would be the fruition, Buddhahood, and we aren't there yet. The five Buddhas and the five wisdoms are not separate from us now, though. Our illusion and our habitual tendencies of self-cherishing, these things obscure and obstruct our ability to clearly see our true nature and the true nature of all things. And until we do see that, we need to recognize that we're suffering from ignorance, and we're suffering because of ignorance. And to establish this ground, which KKR, Kenpo Karda Rinpoche described as understanding that we're ignorant of the true nature, and we need to contemplate it and think about it. When Rinpoche, in this commentary, there's a ground, path, and fruition is a common logical construct in Tibetan Buddhism. So it can mean several, it can be put together several different ways. The way, the context in which Rinpoche uses it in this commentary is that the ground is understanding that we are confused. And then the path is the meditation, the practice. And then the fruition is the result of that. The fruition is you know, experiencing the five wisdoms and the five Buddha families. So again, to establish this ground, we need to understand that we're ignorant of our true nature right now. And we need to think about that. And how do we know that we are still afflicted with ignorance? It's because we still react to situations with the five poisons, because we still experience these poisons and we indulge them. As long as that's going on, we know that we are afflicted with ignorance. And as long as those kleshas are not arising as the five wisdoms, it's because our perception is still deluded. So understanding that, we must apply the path. Understanding it alone is not enough. It doesn't get us anywhere just knowing that. We have to apply the antidotes, our meditation practices. We have to put in the effort to do these incredible practices that we're so blessed to have learned from this unbroken lineage that runs all the way back to our teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. And Rinpoche used an analogy about, like, if you were thought you were walking west, you're trying to walk to the west, and you bump into somebody who knows where they are, and they say, no, you're walking east. You know, that's like understanding that we're that we are suffering from ignorance of our true nature. So this person told you you're going the wrong way, but that's not enough. If you're trying to go to the west, and you were walking east, when you know that you had made a mistake, then you have to turn the other direction and move your feet in the other direction. You know, you have to put the effort in to go the other way. And so that was his analogy for what we're talking about in terms of applying the path, understanding the ground, understanding that we're ignorant of our true nature is like realizing that there's a problem. And then the path is actually putting the effort in, and that effort happens primarily on the cushion, off the cushion too, of course, but our formal practice is central to that. So it's an incredibly fortunate situation we're in right now to have access to the Dharma and to these teachings and these practices, and we have to make use of them. And the only way we'll ever transcend our suffering and transform our negative emotions is to practice the path. But again, there's nothing that we're missing. You know, there's nothing that we just need to reveal this nature. And I want to read, because we have a little bit of time, I want to read this analogy here. I may have read this last time, but I think this really points out what I mean about us already having what we need. Rinpoche says, we must make an immense effort to become familiar with the accumulation of wisdom. To say that we must make the effort to always engage in meritorious activity is another way of saying that we must make the effort to actualize the accumulation of wisdom. I discussed those last time in the last talk. I'm sorry, I didn't get to those today. But the accumulation of merit being meritorious activities of body, speech, and mind. And then the accumulation of wisdom is what it's discovered through meditation when we have experiences of the nature of mind. And it's kind of tough to actually accumulate wisdom. The best way to do it, and that's kind of what he's saying here, is through meritorious action. And he says to say that we must make the effort to always engage in meritorious activity is another way of saying that we must make the effort to actualize the accumulation of wisdom. So he says, in the process, we come to understand the true nature of things. For example, when the mind is no longer confused, we see the true nature of the five aggregates as the five Buddhas, and experience them as their pure realms. When this confusion disappears, what appears to the confused mind as the five aggregates are seen as the five Buddhas. How is it that the five aggregates can manifest as the realms of the five Buddhas? The aggregates are like a pile of wood. If you have a pile of wood and want to be warm, you do not take away the wood, because without wood there is no fire. Only with the wood present can the flame and its warmth appear. And I think this also applies to the wisdoms, because the aggregates are the result, the five Buddhas are the purified result of the aggregates, and the Buddhas are also the embodiment of the wisdoms. So he says, similarly, the idea of realizing the five Buddhas does not imply the disappearance of the five aggregates. The five aggregates are the instrument for seeing the true nature of things, the key for realizing our Buddha potential. And this is kind of a complex sentence, but he says, just as the absence of fire does not mean the absence of the potential of a pile of wood to give us warmth, so our present absence of understanding does not mean the absence of the potential of the five mental afflictions to manifest in us as the five wisdoms. So similarly, just as the absence of fire doesn't mean the absence of a pile of wood to give us warmth. If there's a pile of wood and there's no fire, we don't think that can't make us warm, is what he's saying here. So similarly, our present absence of understanding does not mean the absence of the potential of the five mental afflictions to manifest in us as the five wisdoms. So we see the five mental afflictions, and we know that with them, they carry the potential to manifest in us as the five Buddhas, the five Buddha families, or the five wisdoms. So I hope I said that right. It is a complex sentence. I'm going to read his sentence one more time. Just as the absence of fire does not mean the absence of the potential of a pile of wood to give us warmth, so our present absence of understanding does not mean the absence of the potential of the five mental afflictions to manifest in us as the five wisdoms. So that is all I have. And I hope you all are still there, because I've only been looking at my slide deck. So we have about 10 minutes left. For once, I actually put together a talk that I didn't have to rush through, and it was about some really complex stuff. I'm glad. Does anyone have any questions about that? That was a lot of information. But like I said in the beginning, the purpose of this is really to get you on the cushion, you know, to get you doing your practice. That's what all this information is for. And that's really what all of our study should be for. Because, you know, and when I say no one has ever studied their way to enlightenment, I'm quoting Kepa Karta Rinpoche. He definitely said that to us in retreat. So, you know, learning about all this stuff, I think can a lot of times be, you know, the desire to read and the desire to continue to learn a bunch of topics and names and terminology and philosophy and reading a lot of books, you know, things like that. Like, I think that sometimes can be a little bit of a symptom of that enrapturedness with this lucidity aspect that we were talking about today. Like, it can, and I'm not saying we shouldn't study, but I'm saying that, like, it can be misused as a way to indulge our fixation on the lucidity aspect of the ultimate nature, when we should, in fact, maybe be spending that time working with these practices that help to actually help us to experience that nature. Because it's the experience of that nature by which we achieve enlightenment. We can't talk about it or understand our way to it. Like, we have to experience it. We have to see it. And that happens through our practice. So that's why it's so important that we get down on the cushion and get our hands dirty. Yvette says, would you explain the emptiness again? Not sure what it means. Good. I said, like I mentioned earlier, if you don't understand, then you're in the right place. If you think you got it, you're stuck. But I'll talk about it some more. The nature of things, it said, is emptiness. Emptiness is described as having two aspects. It's like a limitlessness and an awareness. And the reason that we say that things are empty, another way to look at it is interdependent. Like, when we talk about things being interdependent, it's like this idea that, like somebody asked me the other day, they said that, like, when something happens, they always want to figure out why it happened. You know, like, what's the cause of this? I want to trace it back to the cause. And that can be problematic, because nothing has one cause. Everything comes from multiple causes. And once you find, if you can isolate a cause, sometimes we can do that, you know, like sometimes it's kind of obvious why a thing happened. But then that cause, you know, that is going to be affected also by the conditions that surround it. And then those, each of those causes and conditions will have their own causes and conditions. So if we think about like, I had a delicious salad last night that I cut from the garden. This is, I'm not telling a true story. I'm using an example. But so if that were the case, like we could say, okay, so that's because I had a garden, right? Well, it's also because of the fact that like there was the right amount of moisture and there were the right amount of nutrients in the soil and there was the right temperature to help support the growth of that seed. And then if we want to look at each one of those, like maybe like why were the right nutrients there? Okay, well, what plant matter died there previously? You know, what erosion did or didn't occur that led to that soil having nutrients? So what we're saying is that like no thing is, it's kind of, we can't isolate anything as independent and unchanging. Everything is interdependent. Everything is only labelable because of the causes and conditions that lead to it. So similarly, the self is empty of any selfness because we are constantly changing, you know, that our moods change, our thoughts change, our experiences change, our cells that make up our body are constantly changing. We are like Pema Chodron used the example that, we are like a river, you know, like when you go to see a river, it's never the same river, you know, it's always a different set of water moving through there, you know, and different sets of causes and conditions that made that. So, and it's only because of this emptiness, this sort of open space that stuff can happen at all. Because if the true nature was solid, nothing could change. You know, if it was solid and permanent, then nothing could ever change. So it's because of this emptiness that we're able to see all the appearances, like the things that appear and arise from emptiness, the lucidity aspect. Like we're able to know and be aware of all the ways that emptiness manifests, all of the multiplicity of phenomena, which is the other aspect of emptiness. So emptiness has these two aspects of lucidity and emptiness, or limitlessness and clarity. Or for instance, like we mentioned with Vajrayana, you know, Tantra practices, visualizing as deities, it's these two aspects of vividly seeing the deity and knowing that it is insubstantial, thinking of it as being made of light. You know, we see it clearly, but it's made of light. It's insubstantial. So in that way, we're actually engaging with the true nature. We're getting a more correct view of the way things are. So emptiness itself is non-conceptual. It's non-dual. It is only seen correctly, you know, by Buddhas, you know, by enlightened beings. So the fruition, when we talked earlier about the ground, path, and fruition, the ground being understanding that we're confused, the path being applying the meditation, and the fruition is understanding, is seeing emptiness, is understanding emptiness. So until we get there, we're never going to fully get it. And that's actually quite good that we know that, you know, because if we think we've got it, then we're attached to something, you know, and we're attached particularly to some kind of wrong view until we're there. And we'll know that we're not there, again, because we still experience these, the afflictive emotions. You know, we're not experiencing the wisdoms, we're experiencing anger and jealousy and desire and ignorance. As long as we keep experiencing those, we know we're not there yet. So Yvette, I hope that helped. Hope that filled it out a little bit. Does anyone else have any questions? You're welcome, Karmakunga. Okay, well, thank you all for allowing me to speak today. I hope that I was accurate in describing this stuff. I hope I didn't make any mistakes. I confess if I did. Any mistakes that I made are completely my own. I rejoice in all of the good activities, the meritorious work, the benefiting of beings that all of our teachers do. Lama Kathy, Kemba Carter Rinpoche, His Holiness Karmapa. And I hope that they continue to teach and they stay with us for a long time. And I want to dedicate all this merit. So I will say the dedication, and actually I have a slide for that. So how about if we do that, eh? So let's say this together. By this merit, may we obtain the omniscience of Buddhahood and defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, may we free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thank you, everyone. And I will also put up here briefly, if you are able and you wish to, here is the link to help support the rebuilding of the Columbus KTC. We are in the final stretch where we're raising money for the shrine. So all the money now goes to the heart of the temple. You know, if the kitchen is the heart of a home, the shrine is the heart of the temple. So all of this money goes towards the shrine, cabinets, and the beautiful pillars and beams that will be there. And all to Kempo Carter Rinpoche's specifications. So anything you can do to help, if you know people who you think would want to help, maybe pass this link on to them too. Rejoice in all of your good works and all of your practice, and get on the cushion, do your practice, benefit beings. Let's all do our best all the time so that we can realize that true nature, transform our negative emotions into the wisdoms. All right. Take care, everybody. See you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.